Okay.
Go. In this week's Parsha, we're told that people complain once again for this time for meat. At this point in time, we're also told that for some reason Moshe decides this time he can't handle it. He's just about had it. And Hashem agrees with him. Hashem agrees, yes, you can't handle it. Why is it at this time that Moshe can't handle it? Why after everything he's done? He just came off the golden calf. One of the biggest things that could probably happen. And this seems not as significant. And it seems also the beginning of the spiral downward to make a decision that not only Moshe doesn't enter the land of Israel, neither does the original generation.
Maybe we can talk about Howard's question together with yours. Howard wanted to understand a little bit more about who Aaron HaKohen was. Moshe, by comparison, by contrast, presents a very kind of straightforward, simple picture. He's this dedicated servant, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He finally does get stuck some very minor mistake. Everybody struggles to figure out why it's a mistake. But Aaron is not too easy to understand. He has a certain complicity with the ego, and then he loses his two sons. He's not included in the dedication to the temple, and he's upset about it. And he thinks it's because that his shevet suffers because he's unworthy. So we talked a little bit before about the fact that there are two currents, two directions that the divine energy flows. And one is where people, by the fact that they are engaged in the study of Torah, in tefillah, that invoking the divine name in a variety of different ways, in learning and in tefillah, they bring the Ribbon Shlelam into this world. So the direction that the divine energy is flowing is God is being drawn into this world by man. Then there's another thing. There's the fact that inasmuch as this is the Olam HaSiyah, it's the world of doing, it's a world in which we have all of the many challenges of trying to define everything that we do in our physical world in a way which is consistent with God, that we try to develop a consciousness which we confer upon everything that we do. When we eat, we try with our brachas and with the attitude or the awareness that creates to eat in a way in which we can dedicate eating to Hashem. When we do business, we try to do business honestly, be people of our word, not to in any which way deceive people about our merchandise, take more money than our merchandise is worth. If we know that somebody has kind of has been working to make a certain acquisition, then we should not, when we come upon this, decide, oh, we want this, and then take it away from them. There are all kinds of halachas that relate to our interaction with the world of commerce. We're children to our parents, we're parents to our children, we're spouses, we're friends, all of those things are very immediate, very kind of pragmatic concerns. And there, our intent is to take the world and lift it up. We want to define the world in a way in which we bring the world closer to God. So we're either calling God down into this world, or we're trying to call the world up to God. So there's these two things, these two directions. So Moshe would be emblematic of the individual whose life is dedicated to the spiritual world in a way in which we're trying to bring the Ribbono Shel Olam down to this world. And Aaron HaKohen would be much more consistent with the paradigm of someone who's trying to raise the world up to God. That's really the whole Avodah, and the Mizbeach is trying to elevate the world. You put the world onto the altar, as it were. not unexpectedly, we would anticipate that Aaron's work is much more challenging. It's much more difficult to be in the world, to be of the world, and trying to elevate it. It's a dangerous mission we're on. There are a lot of banana peels around. There are a lot of slippery slopes around. It's very, very hard, especially in as much as you're not there yourself, you're interacting with other people. So Moshe Rabbeinu is much more kind of the one who's on top of the mountain and comes down occasionally to teach, but he's removed. He's removed from the world. He has this ultimate removal where he even renounces intimacy with his wife, which is it brings a great deal of consternation from his sister and brother. Feel that that renunciation is not consistent with Jewish thought. That's another thing. So Aaron, in a certain way, his involvement in the Egel is really kind of an expression of having to deal with people and trying to, you know, they want things which are not good and you want to forestall it, so you get involved in compromise. In the process of doing these things, there's an opportunity for, you know, these supreme transformations, but you get bruised. And Aaron HaKohen goes through life with a broken heart. No, that's not. And that's what really qualifies him for his work. He does what Moshe Rabbeinu can't do because he has a broken heart. And as such, is much more capable of representing Israel to God than is Moshe. Now, it's not that Moshe formally renounces the world because it doesn't work. It's very much like the story that I told here a number of times before, where a chassid comes to Rabbi Yitzchok of Volka. He comes to him, he says to him, Rebbe, counsel with you about my spirituality. So he says, okay, tell me what you do. So he said to him, well, I fast. I fast a lot. So the Rebbe says to him, the Baal Shem HaKodesh insisted that it wasn't for our times anymore. That way was not for our times. So he says, but Rebbe, isn't it true that the Baal Shem fasted from Shabbos to Shabbos? So the Rebbe said to him, you don't understand. He said, the Baal Shem HaKodesh used to... So he said, the Baal Shem HaKodesh, after Shabbos, so Sunday morning, he would go up to the mountains for some seclusion, solitude, and his Rebbetzin would pack him a basket full of food for the week. And then he would be in solitude a whole week, then he'd come back from the mountain, down the mountain, and he would bring the basket back with him. She'd open up the basket and all the food would be there. And she would say to him, what happened? Well, how come you didn't eat? And he would look at her somewhat incredulously and say, I didn't? You know, it wasn't that he didn't eat. He was so swept up and he was so consumed by what he was doing that he had no desire to eat. It wasn't that he didn't eat. It just he didn't. Moshe Rabbeinu, he was so swept up in the ecstasy of what he was doing that he had no need. It didn't present itself as something. It wasn't that he had to renounce anything. He was involved in something which filled all of his appetites, all of his desires were filled. So Moshe Rabbeinu was called by the Zohar Sheshvina de Malka, as it were, the king's advocate. And Aaron HaKohen is called Sheshvina de Matronusa, he's the queen's advocate. Aaron HaKohen represents Klal Yisrael. And Klal Yisrael deals with life. And they deal with life using the Torah that Moshe teaches them, but they're dealing with it on the ground, and Moshe Rabbeinu is dealing with it in the mountain. So when the first time comes that Aaron HaKohen is initiated into the kahuna, and it's the eighth day of the Miluim, and he's supposed to move towards the Mizbeach to do the final offerings. He looks up at the Mizbeach, and of course the Mizbeach has these corners that come up. It's not just flat. The corners come up. So the Medrash says that he looked up at the Mizbeach, and the corners looked to him like the horns of a cow or of an eagle. What he saw was the calf. So he was frozen, couldn't go. And there he was, he was back again. You know, someone could argue it's, the earlier Rorschach. You see what you're thinking about, you see what you're torn up about. And Moshe Rabbeinu says to him, go. That's why you were chosen. You were chosen because that's what you see. You were chosen because you have a broken heart. You were chosen because you can identify with the fact that Klal Yisrael struggles with the Yetzer Hara and makes mistakes and then regrets their mistake. That, you know, you're the right person. You're really the best person for this position. So when they dedicate the Mizbeach and the Shevet Levi is not chosen, Aaron HaKohen blames himself. The reason that somehow that the Shevet Levi does not have a specific role in the dedication is because of me. I'm really the one who represents them, but it's really inappropriate for me to be there. So and Hashem says to him, no, I got bigger things for you, better things for you. So Aaron is a more complex. Aaron is capable of getting into the people, finding out who's not getting along with somebody else, and he's capable of going to people and not telling them quite the whole truth so that they'll think well of their friends who they just had this terrible argument with, and then they'll reconcile. Or he's capable of going to a husband and wife who've had a bad spat, kind of bending the truth a little bit. Moshe Rabbeinu can't do that. Moshe Rabbeinu is not capable of bending the truth. And even though it's right, he's living in a different place. And the Mefarshim say that what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying to God was, the people are asking for meat. I can't relate to it. They're asking me to plead on their behalf for meat, and I can't do it because I can't get into it. If I want to plead their case, I should feel it. I should really be able to appeal to you by identifying with it. I can't identify with it. You know, let's get some people who are leaders, but who can identify with it? So what he was saying to them is that I'm not in a position to represent the people. Give me people from every tribe. They will surround me, and they will be able to represent the interests of me, but I can't do it anymore. It's not because I don't want to. I just can't identify with them anymore. So, like in Pasuk 13, he says, "Me'ayin libosa losseis rum." So, where do I have meat for this nation that they cry to me, saying, "Give us meat that we can eat"? And one way of reading that is, I don't have the flesh for it. My flesh doesn't have that appetite that they should call upon me, that I should represent them. It's not a desire that I can identify with anymore. And of course, that leads then into the fact that Moshe, you have, as David indicated, there's the little glimmer over here of Moshe's not being able to go into the land, because going into the land is a very physical thing. It's getting involved in the land. Now you're going to become an agricultural land, you're going to become manufacturing land, you're going to become a country. Who's going to provide for the sewers? The desert, you have all the miracles. You get into the land, then that's a different thing. So Eldad and Medad prophesies that Moshe is not going to take him in. And then the Sedra ends with the fact that Moshe is criticized by his brother and sister for having stopped his physical intimacy with his wife. The thread that kind of joins all of these things is the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu is in a different place. It's very hard for us to read this other than in our own, from our own perspective, and we have to be careful. That generation was called the Doradea, a generation that was extremely accomplished and spiritually so. Nonetheless, we approach it through our own experience. I think one of the considerations is, I was once speaking to an attorney here in Milwaukee whose parents and uncles and aunts came from a very well-to-do family, extremely affluent family, made a lot of money. Anyway, this attorney was doing reasonably well, and I approached him for a contribution, for a donation. So he said to me, "Have you approached my uncles and aunts?" I said to him, "Actually, I've tried, but not with a great deal of success." So he said, "My uncles and aunts," he said, "are paralyzed by fright that they're going to die penniless." He said if they began to spend their money today, they couldn't spend it all before they died. He said, but they live in the fear that they won't have money in their old age, and they can't give it away. There is an element, I think, in everybody that does not want to invade principle in a certain sense, because we're depending on that. And Klal Yisrael knows that they have a lot of cattle, but they also know that when you have several million people who are eating cattle, that they can consume it faster than they're going to rent. And it then becomes a commodity which they won't have. So they're already, now they have plenty. They have a ton of cattle. But they're essentially, what they want is, God, if you really want to make us feel good, so you produce the cattle, you know, you give us meat. That way we don't have to use ours. It's a very human kind of a thing to do, but not a very Jewish or spiritual thing to do. So apparently Hashem did not feel that this was a failure in Moshe's leadership or in Aaron's leadership. There's an amusing, maybe not so amusing, anecdote that they tell about a young man who's he's married, has a young family, and he comes to the Ger Rebbe to complain about the fact that he's suffering. He's destitute. He's suffering. His family's suffering. So the Ger Rebbe says to him, "Chdushim sitom, have you asked your father to help you?" So he said, "Yes," and he's not helping me. He refuses to help me. So the Rebbe said, "Okay, let me talk to him." So a short time later, the Rebbe meets with the father, and he says to him, "Your son was here and says that he's suffering from poverty and you're not helping him." He says, "Rebbe, how can I help him? I don't have." So the Rebbe says to him, "Let me tell you a pasuk in the Torah." And this week's, in quotes in this week's parasha, he says, "The people come and ask Moshe Rabbeinu for meat." So here's what Moshe says. "Did I conceive this nation? Did I give birth to them that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom as a nursing mother would her infant on the land which you swore to them? Where do I have meat to give to this nation that they should require it?" So the Gerev says to him, Moshe is about to tell God that he's having a difficult time. So he introduces this. "Did I give birth to them? Did I conceive them that they should say to me, where do I have meat?" Forget the introduction. The main thing is, they came to ask you for meat. Tell God, they came to ask for meat. Where do I got meat? What are you starting in with this whole business that I conceived and I give birth? So he said, the proof is from here that if he would have given birth, then the claim, where do I have meat, is not a claim. Then you can't say that. Because a parent, you do have, you don't have, you gotta provide. So he said, Moshe Rabbeinu had to first that out by ruling out, Hashem, don't tell me this, but if I would conceive them, then I can't say from where do I have. I don't have. You gotta have. You gotta just that's to your kids. But inasmuch as I didn't conceive them and I didn't give birth to them, so where am I gonna get it from? Okay.